Soldaderas by Brenda J. Carol Cocottle. Illustrated by Jesus Gill. Genre: a biography is the story of a real person's life written by another person. As you read, note dates and other clues that indicate this story is about real people. Question of the week: how can our determination affect our ability to success? La Coronella, Rosa Bobadilla. Elena Arismendi, nurse and founder of La Cruz Blanca Neutral. A soldadera of the Zapatista Army. They say that the Mexican Revolution was a men's revolution. They say that the Mexican Revolution was a men's revolution. They say that the Mexican Revolution was a battle between Madero, Zapata, Villa, and Carranza. They say. But each step along the way, at each battle won or lost, women were there too. Women who were called soldaderas. The Mexican Revolution was a women's revolution. Women cooked for and fed the army. Women took care of the wounded. Women traveled long distances and faced rough journeys on foot or by train. Women were at the front line of the battles. Women were colonels and captains. Women sang by the campfires during the long nights. Women were spies. Women were carrier pigeons, passing on letters with crucial information. Women hid goods, food, water, weapons, and maps in their clothing. Educated women from wealthy homes turned away from their privileged social position to stand up for the rights of peasants, workers, and other women. The women who participated in the Mexican Revolution had to face the prejudice of their own families and friends because they left their homes. Who were those women? What were their names? The Mexican Revolution was a women's revolution. Ventura Garcia, Rosalba Bobadilla, and Elena Arismendi were part of that revolution. The carrier pigeon, Ventura Garcia. There she was, sitting and breathing in the smells of the dark beans, mandarins, and coffee. There she was, sitting and listening to the morning recital. The shouts of the vendors, the laughing children, and the barking dogs. There she was, sitting and waiting, at her market stall where she sold bananas, a dramatic hero in the daily opera of the village market. Her name was Ventura Garcia, Venturita. Sometimes she was so quiet that you might think that she had vanished into thin air. She had learned how to be as silent as a stone. Venturita learned all this when she enrolled in the Mexican Revolution in 1911 and became a messenger for the Zapatistas, the army commanded by Emiliano Zapata. She carried and delivered messages containing classified information, messages that could decide the outcome of a battle. Venturita was only 15 years old when she enrolled in the Mexican Revolution. Being a woman at that time was not easy. Very few women had the opportunity to study. It was a privilege reserved for girls of wealthy, well-educated families. Most peasant women could not read or write. They were expected to get married in their late teens or even earlier. Women could not vote, no matter if they were rich or poor. It was thought that women were helpless. Venturita used this prejudice in her favor. She knew that no one would suspect that she, a small peasant woman, almost a child, was the special messenger of General Zapata. Can you imagine this petite young woman walking through the mountains and valleys from the south of Mexico to the north? Can you imagine her hiding a couple of pistols in her stockings? Can you imagine how many kilometers she traveled? How many trains she took? Can you imagine her walking in the middle of the night, a little piece of paper stitched into her dress, with no more company than the silent moon and the singing of the cicadas? Rumors about the carrier pigeon of the Zapatistas spread. She was captured twice. The first time was in 1913. Her captors wanted her to speak, but she did not say a word. She remained in jail for 27 days. The second time she was captured was in 1917. For 3 days and three nights, she was tortured. The forces of the rival army, commanded by Juan Lechuga, wanted to know an address. They tried to bribe Venturita with silver, but she did not say a word. They threatened her. She did not say a word. They tortured her. She did not say a word. She was released. Once again, she had not broken her silence. Venturita carried messages until the death of Zapata in 1919. 1 year later, she returned home. She remained quiet, but not still. She knew all the secrets of the stones. She knew all the crossroads and all the railway lines. She remained quiet, but not still. There she was at the village market, sitting among the fruit and grocery stalls, with all her memories of the revolution hidden in her silence. Time for a revolution. Rosa Bobadilla. The Coronella is the colonel's wife, but Rosa Bobadilla was more than the wife of Severiano Casas, a colonel in Zapatista's army. She became a colonel in her own right. When Severiano and his two sons followed the Zapatistas and enrolled in the Mexican Revolution, Rosa decided that she would go too. She did not stay at home and wait for them to return, which was what was expected of women at that time. She decided to go to take care of her family, and because she felt it was time to fight on behalf of all of those who could not. Rosa had grown up among men and women who were used to hunger and hard labor. Men and women who suffered many humiliations. Men and women who kept their dignity despite this. She was enraged by the near slavery of that lifestyle, which benefited the landowners but not the workers. It was time for a revolution. Rosa was brave, skilled, and clever. However, daily life at the camp was not easy for her. Most of the soldiers thought of her only as the wife of Colonel Severiano. They did not understand why she demanded active participation. A woman's place was in the kitchen, not with the troops. Rosa had to stand up for herself. A woman's place was anywhere a woman wanted to be. It was time for a revolution, and soon she was on the front line of the battlefield. When Severiano died in action, Rosa took his place. The troops followed her. They did not care that she was a woman. She had proved that she had the necessary military skills. For that reason, Zapata appointed Rosa la Coronela. The lives of 200 men, including the lives of her own children, were in Rosa's hands. I am going to sing a song about a revolutionary woman who was a Zapatista with the forces of the South. Rosa fought in more than 168 dramatic battles. People talked about her, about La Coronela, who wore a sombrero, a percale dress, and a cartridge belt. They talked about La Coronela, who evaded capture by hiding behind a dead horse, knowing that the smell would help to hide her from her persecutors. People talked about her, about Rosa, the woman and mother who saw both of her sons die but kept on fighting. There was no time for tears. There was no time for sorrow. The troops were coming through the fields of Morelos. It was Rosa Bobadilla with 200 guerrillas. Rosa never forgot how difficult daily life was at the camp, not only for the soldiers, but also for the women and children. When the Mexican Revolution ended, she founded a shelter for more than 60 widows and their children, and she was involved in many other activities to help the war widows. Because it was time for revolution. Beyond the Golden Cage, Elena Arizmendi. Her name was Elena, and she knew she was privileged. There was always food when she was hungry and shelter when she was cold. She knew she was fortunate. She could read and write. She had gone to school and received a formal education. And she had trained as a nurse. She knew she was safe. She lived like a bird in a golden cage. She was living in the United States when the Mexican Revolution started. It was there, in Texas, where she met Francisco I. Madero, the man who encouraged the revolutionary movement when he challenged the government of Porfirio Diaz. Elena felt that she must do something. She knew that others had returned home to Mexico to help in the revolution. Why not her? If she returned to Mexico, she could make a difference. Her privileged background, social status, contacts, and professional training could mean something. She took a momentous decision. She stepped out of her golden cage. Elena arrived at Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, in 1911. She had heard that the conditions on the battlefield were rough, but she could never have imagined how bad they were. Many people were injured, and there was no health service to help them. Many died because their wounds became infected, and women and children got sick because of the lack of hygiene at the camps. The Red Cross refused to provide proper care to the revolutionaries. Elena began to organize aid for the revolutionaries. She needed people and money. She invited doctors and nurses to come and help her. It was not an easy task to convince others of the necessity of professional medical help on the battleground. Besides, some of the people that she invited did not support the revolutionary cause. But Elena was determined. She started a fundraising campaign among her wealthy friends and appealed to intellectuals and artists. Some of them refused to give her any money, but others were pleased to help her. Little by little, she finally gathered enough money to establish a field hospital and 3 medical brigades. The name of this new medical body was La Cruz Blanca Neutral, the Neutral White Cross. The Neutral White Cross spread from Chihuahua to Guerrero, from Guerrero to Morelos, and from Morelos to Mexico City. Doctors and nurses trained soldaderas so that they could help the wounded. Meanwhile, Elena continued her fundraising campaign. In the end, there were 25 medical brigades throughout the country. Elena was admired because of her desire to help others and criticized because of her ideas about women's rights. Women were expected to be quiet and compliant. But Elena believed that women should have a voice and a more active role in society. Her experiences during the Mexican Revolution convinced her, more than ever, that women were treated unfairly. Unfortunately, she could not find the support she needed in Mexico, and so she decided to leave the country and live in the United States. Life in New York was different. She founded a magazine called International Feminism and a cooperative for Latin American women in the United States. She organized events, gatherings, reunions, and even a congress about women's rights. Her name was Elena, and she spoke out. They say that the Mexican Revolution was a men's revolution. They say that the Mexican Revolution was a men's revolution. They say that the Mexican Revolution was a battle between Madero, Zapata, Villa, and Carranza. They say. But at each step along the way, at each battle won or lost, women were there too. Women who were called soldaderas. The Mexican Revolution was a women's revolution. Women who deserve our admiration. Their involvement was crucial. Women traveled long distances and faced rough journeys on foot or by train. Women carried letters containing significant information. Women hid goods, food, water, weapons, and maps in their clothing. Women like Ventura Garcia. Did her feet feel sore? Did others know that she could read and write? Did she feel like an angry pot about to boil over? What made her do something so dangerous? How many languages did she have to learn? The language of the wind, military codes, how to read maps, and interpret signs. Women were at the front line of the battles. Women were colonels and captains. Women sang by the campfires during the long nights. Women like Rosario Bobadilla. Was she given an invitation? No, she invited herself. Did she cry? Was it difficult to command a troop of men? Did she feel alone at the battle camp? How did she bear the loss of her children who died in action? Educated women came from wealthy homes and turned away from their privileged social position to stand up for the rights of peasants, workers, and other women. Women who participated in the Mexican Revolution had to face the prejudice of their own families and friends because they left their homes. Women like Elena Arizmendi. Was she afraid? How difficult was it for her to realize that privileged women were not really privileged? How many intellectual battles did she have to fight? Without the participation of these women, other revolutions, revolutions without weapons, revolutions of ideas, would not have been possible. The revolution in 1927 that made it possible for any Mexican girl to get basic formal education. And later, the revolution that made it possible for women to go to university and submit an application to undertake professional training. The revolution in 1952 that allowed Mexican women to vote for the first time. The revolution of the Zapatistas, women in 1994. And current revolutions against prejudice, discrimination, and inequality. They say, I say. I say the Mexican Revolution was a women's revolution.